On EWTN Global Catholic Radio, you'll hear a wide variety of speakers discussing a multitude of topics, from atheism to zeal. But what are the fundamental realities that often lie hidden beneath these topics? Well, Father Thomas Dubé uncovers these very foundations on the program Bedrock Basics. Now here's Father Dubé.
Thank you for joining us. I'm Father Thomas Dubé, and I welcome you to this segment, which is actually a continuation of last week in our discussion of perspective as a basic, fundamental, deeply important aspect of human life, to see things as they actually are, namely the big things as big and the little ones as little. And we took several examples last week. We considered St. Paul, how marvelously he saw his intense sufferings, all sorts of them, and compared them to eternity and saw them exactly as they are, in perspective. Then we took an example from a little squabble between a husband and a wife, and how they did not see things in perspective, how immensely more important that they would love each other than they win that little verbal battle. Now, we were at that point when we suspended operations, and we take up there. And what I should like to do at the moment is to illustrate at much greater length with a number of examples, because as I said last time, it is very difficult for you and me to see things as they are. Small as small, big as big. And so I have several illustrations. In heavy traffic, and suppose you're driving your car, and somebody cuts in front of you, most impolitely, even dangerously. That annoys all of us. And some of us fume, and they speak of road rage. And there's something to be angry about there, I grant you that. But we should see the thing as it is. And notice how allowing myself to get all upset about it, you see, my upsetness is not going to change that picture in the least. Why don't I just take it as a little bit of suffering that I endure from somebody else and remain at peace about it and enjoy the drive home? That would be seeing the thing in perspective, not magnifying it into something that's worthy of exploding practically in my inner life and my mind. A second example, and if you don't find that this one fits you, you are a rare individual. Namely, many people assume that it is more important to talk a lot than to have ample time for God in prayer. Let me illustrate this. You know Matthew 12:36, of course, Jesus speaking, "Of every idle word men speak, they shall give account on judgment day." Now, to many ears, that would come over, I think, as extreme. You mean I can't speak uselessly at all without giving an account one day? The Lord's right for more reasons than we have time to point out here. There are a number of reasons why he's right, but I'm not going to go into them. I just want to make the point that many people assume in their lives, because of their choices, they even hear about a deep prayer life, about contemplative prayer, for example, and the magnificent change it brings about in a person. It makes that beauty we spoke of earlier in this series, the human person in the supernatural order, beautiful. And yet many people don't see that the contemplation depth in God is immensely more important than talking uselessly. And that is what an idle word is. It doesn't benefit the speaker, doesn't benefit the listener, doesn't benefit a third party. It's useless. And do you see the difference between the contemplative prayer and the idle word and the proportion between them? As Psalm 27, verse 4 puts it, "The one thing I ask of the Lord," which is a biblical way of saying top priority. That's what one thing means in this context. Of all the things I have to do in my life, number one is to commune deeply with God. And any theist who is consistent with his theism, of course, holds that. Nothing could compare. Do I see this big thing as really big in my life and live that way and see the little thing, the useless speech, Useless. Speech is very good and noble and all the rest, but useless. Do I see that as tiny, tiny, not to be compared with the other? If you do, you're close to saintliness. A third example. Do you see the difference between spending loads of time with, again, superfluous TV, even sometimes harmful TV, and the difference between that and your spiritual reading, or again, your prayer life? If you see the difference, then you're seeing things in perspective. By the way, the word perspective comes from two Latin words, per, which means through, and specere, which means to see. So perspective actually, in its etymology, comes from these two words that a person really sees through reality and sees it as it is. So in this example, a person has perspective. If he sees television as a great gift, we are in your home right now through the gift of television and communicating very useful ideas, not because they're mine, they're not my ideas, they're God's. He's got it, you see. So it's a valuable medium, no doubt. But to waste hours on it with useless things is not to have perspective, because there are far more important things that every one of us should be doing. That's another example. A fourth example, how much time did I spend before the mirror this morning? My time before the mirror is not exactly a joy. I get tired of looking at that face constantly. So I have to shave. Okay. And I'm not blaming that, of course. But there are people who I think spend loads and loads of times primping up. Not that this is necessarily bad. Beauty, even physical beauty, is a good thing. But it's proportion again. How much time do I spend in beautifying my face? I spend very little time at that, I can tell you. Not that it's any benefit of mine. But in any event, there are people who just spend loads of time with their cosmetics and all the rest, you see. But how much time do I spend and do you spend at prayer, at spiritual reading, at studying the Universal Catechism, loaded with truth, that explains all kinds of things, beautifully explains Scripture, the lives of the saints. Not that there's much about their lives, but their insights into reality. That is immensely more important to beautify our soul than to primp up our body. After all, the body, you know, is destined for the dissolution, to use a nice scientific, not scientific exactly, but sanitary term. It's destined for the dissolution of the grave. Now, happily, it's destined for the resurrection of the body. That's the final beauty. And that resurrection beauty is going to be determined by the degree of love with which we die. And at that moment. So, do we see the proportion, the perspective, between the time we spend on our body and the time we spend on our soul? If you do, you are really making progress. A fifth example, and here I don't want to be too hard on the world, and by the world I don't mean the beautiful world that God created, I mean the worldly world. We all know what it is. You can't open a daily paper without knowing what the worldly world is about. A lot of good things in the daily paper, but a lot else is not primary by a long shot. The worldly world seems almost entirely incapable, almost, of seeing things as they are. The big ones as big and the small ones as small. Consider the amount of time spent on television and in the daily newspaper with celebrities. Now, I admire some celebrities who really accomplish, but the time spent on them. When Michael Jordan retired, and he's a tremendous basketball player, he's a kind of dream in motion. And I have nothing in the least against Michael Jordan as a man and as a basketball player. That's not the point at all. But when he retired, it was just days of all kinds of print, all kinds of TV about that. And how much time is given when one of the missionaries of charity, Mother Teresa's nuns, picks up a man in a gutter, and maybe two or three of them bring the man into one of their homes and wash him up and treat him with really tender love and help him to die with dignity. That doesn't even appear in two lines of newsprint or 10 seconds of TV, for the most part. Again, I'm not here, it sounds as though I'm downing things, and that's not my point. My point is perspective. The second thing is an eternal thing. And of course, if Michael Jordan signed dunks and what else he did so magnificently, if he had supernatural motivation, which I hope he did, that will have eternal results too. But I'm talking about the worldly world's view of things. And it's got it exactly the opposite. It's that act of love for that dying man, probably repulsive with his wounds and oozing this and oozing that perhaps, who is treated with so much tender love. That's the big thing. And one could go on and cite the example to get to another sport when, what's his name again? Yeah, Mark McGuire broke the home run record of Babe Ruth and hit 70 of them in one season. Somebody paid, so an account had it, $3 million for that ball. Well, I'm in favor of the ball. I don't think I'd walk across the street, though, to... Oh, I might. Maybe I'd walk across the street to see it. But I certainly wouldn't pay anything for it. That's all. Now, you might say you have a different setup of values than I do. Well, maybe you do. I don't know. That's not the point. The point is that in the big scope of reality, that home run ball... Well, it was very interesting. I was interested in that home run race with Sandy Sosa and Mark McGuire, and they're both great players, of course, and very skillful. And I admire that. It's an accomplishment. It's a tribute to the human body and their minds and their keenness, yes. But there's no proportion in the attention given to that and something else. If somebody is smiling at somebody right now, annoying them, whether it's a husband smiling at the wife or the wife at the husband or anybody else, that's much more important than that baseball. Get the things in proportion. Now I want to turn our attention to models of marvelous perspective. We already considered Paul. I've given you some examples from the nitty-gritty of our lives. And now I want to take a look at the Lord Himself, perfection in the flesh. Let's take a peek at His prayer life. I had mentioned that already. We've had series on that subject. It is so crucial. It is so the one thing, as Scripture says it is, that naturally it's going to come up in other subjects like this one right now. And I want to show you how the Lord, immensely more important than anybody else that ever walked the planet, there's just no comparison, how He got things right and how He lived His human life on earth, which of course was also a divine life because He is a divine person with a human nature. Let's look at that text in Mark's Gospel, chapter 1, verse 35. Says Mark, in the morning, long before dawn, He got up and left the house and went off to a lonely place and was absorbed in prayer. Now here's somebody whom the world needs dreadfully more than it needs you or me. I'm not saying we are unimportant. As we said in our first segment, we are very great indeed. Granted what God has given us. Of course we are. But next to the Lord, well, I needn't finish that sentence. Now, this Lord, nonetheless, notice what we read in this text. In the morning, long before dawn, that must be at least an hour, probably two or three, He gets up. He leaves the house. He goes to a lonely place. He's at pains to have suitable circumstances to commune with the Father. And he's absorbed in prayer. And Luke tells us in chapter 5, verse 16, he would always go off. I'm quoting that text now. He would always go off where he could be alone and pray. That is getting things right. As we already said, communing with God is the deep source of our human dignity, that we're called even to that, communing with the infinite God, just unspeakable glory to the human person. And Luke tells us in that chapter 5, verse 16, that the Lord would habitually do that. That's the Greek word that Luke used, that habitually he would go off to the Father, solitude, to commune with the Father. Even he would spend some time all night at it. He's got things in perspective, perfectly. And that's the way the saints operate, by the way. They have it in perspective also. More about them in just a little while. In Matthew's Gospel, chapter 6, verse 6, in the Sermon on the Mount, when you pray, go to your private room. Please notice he is envisioning an ordinary family here. He's not talking about a monastery. He's talking about husband, wife, children. When you pray, go to your private room, and when you have shut your door, pray to your Father in that secret place. This is necessary also in married life, anybody's life. Now, this, by the way, is one reason we have monks and nuns. They have a lifestyle so set up that they easily have these opportunities for prayer and for putting God number one, the one thing I ask, the one thing I seek, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord. That's the fundamental reason they become monks and nuns, for this deep communion with the Lord. It makes perfect sense. For those who are called to that vocation, that's exactly what they should be doing. Now notice, however, that married people are, while they don't have a monastery, are to make a little monastery. That is, find your room, close the door, and pray to your Father in secret. It's significant to me, and I think on a moment's reflection to you, how this God, who casts out 50 billion galaxies, you can't imagine the power and the distance in one galaxy, with probably 60 billion stars in the galaxy, pouring out all that, and he goes to this fine detail of human life. When you pray, go to the room, private room, close the door. Wow, that's staggering. But he's got it right. He sees the big thing, biggest, communing with the Father, as big, and the little things as little. Not that the other duties of married people or priests or monks or nuns or brothers or sisters, I take it that everything we do has its importance, if we're doing what we ought to do. Perfect perspective. Think of his perspective on the cross. He had been whipped, beaten, spit upon, mocked, crowned with thorns. And on the cross, he says, nailed to a cross. It's just frightful, even to think of it. And his reaction, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. That is divine seeing, divine perspective. Now, let me illustrate this marvel of perspective as we find it in the saints. Here I will just give you a little rapid summary. It's part of sanctity, heroic virtue, the transforming union. All of this makes up sanctity. It's part of it that these people see petty things as petty. They really do. This is why if somebody is impatient toward them, they don't get shook up at all, because they see it as small. That is, that somebody was a little bit harsh toward me. They shouldn't be harsh. I'm not condoning it, not in the least, nor does the saint condone it. But it's no big deal when you consider that our master was spit on. Nobody ever spit on me yet. The saints see this all in perspective. I just tick off a few of the ways they do. They care nothing about trivialities, useless things. They just can't be bothered with them because they've got big things on their mind, really big. They're full of love. That's big. You can't get bigger than love. God is love. And the most important thing we have to do on the face of the earth is love. So they couldn't be concerned with trivialities. They don't want superfluities, things that we really don't need. They're heroic in their love of enemies. Just read, if you have any doubt about that, read their lives. Read how the martyrs die. Wow, it's a miracle. We call it a moral miracle, that kind of sanctity. They see things in perspective, that it's much more important to love this enemy than to be finding fault or getting some personal satisfaction out of finding fault or complaining or griping. They are models of patience for the very same kind of reason that they see the big things as big and the little things as little. And so if a husband nags at his wife or the other direction, the saintly husband or wife will see that in proportion and not get all shook up about it and start with the nasty little fight that can easily ensue because they see things as they really are. The humility of the saints. Humility, by the way, is by no means a weak self-image. That is not humility. Because we are valuable and precious, and it's not against humility to acknowledge that. And if we've done things well, to acknowledge they have done well. We have done well. That is also in consonant with humility. And it's not a least bit vain. We don't parade our accomplishments, hopefully, that's pride. But the humility of the saints, they see things as they really are, and so if they're slighted, they see it as small. They actually welcome the opportunity to participate with the Lord in his passion and being spit on, crowned with thorns, and so on. The self-sacrifice of the saints in living as they do. Thomas More, a married man, husband, father, Chancellor of the England of his day, lawyer also. The way he lived and the way he died, he saw things exactly as they are. Perspective. Their prayer life. I needn't say any more about that. I've mentioned it already. But the saints live exactly the sort of thing I've talked about. In this segment even, little remarks here and there, you notice. They live this because they see things as they really are. Since I just mentioned Thomas More, let me just mention him again. Pops into my mind at this moment. Thomas More spent hours at night in prayer. Married man, father. And was he a good father? Wow, he knew how to raise children. And he didn't neglect them in the least. And he didn't neglect the kingdom. He was second in charge in the kingdom, the England of his day. And he even practiced law in behalf of poor people, because they couldn't pay for legal assistance. And he, therefore, not only didn't neglect his prayer life, he took care of it very well in the context of the whole picture. He had perspective. Martyrs, loving those who were torturing them. If you want to read any kind of life of a martyr that I've ever read, it's an example of this. But you might take a look at the North American martyrs sometimes and see how they reacted to the Indians who were torturing them. Not quite to death, because they didn't want the martyrs to die. They wanted them to suffer. And then finally they did die and were killed. But the patience of those martyrs and the fortitude of them, remarkable. Libraries are full of examples of the perspective of the saints. Men and women, even children, in this life living, seeing the big things as big and the little ones as little. No comparison. If you want to take a look at the models of these beauties and compare them with what we find, for instance, in papers and magazines, celebrity sort of things, and just ponder on your own, even aside from what I've been saying, ponder the difference between what we've just said now, the Lord, his saints, the Sermon on the Mount, and ponder what you read in the columns of celebrity periodicals. Again, I'm not really downing celebrity. I'm just saying, let's see things as they actually are. And if you read these side by side and thoughtfully, you will see still more deeply the sort of thing that I'm talking about. See you next week. Bye-bye. God bless.